This is the Quality News Network. There's been an historic breakthrough in diplomatic efforts between Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the help of the White House. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to revive long-stalled peace talks starting early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin next month with full agreement reached by late next year. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who called him a traitor. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said goodbye to his troops today. He's expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. He'll be sworn in as civilian president then on Thursday. Six unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing nine Iraqi policemen. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. NFL star safety Sean Taylor died of a gunshot wound today after being shot by an intruder at his home near Miami, Florida. The 24-year-old played for the Washington Redskins. He was their first pick in the 2004 NFL draft. Texas oil man Oscar Wyatt was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison for conspiracy in the United Nations oil for food scandal. The 83-year-old self-made oil tycoon is one of seven individuals convicted in the matter, along with Chevron Corporation, which paid $30 million in civil and criminal liability in that case. Unless carbon emissions are cut in half over the next generation, climate change is likely to cause large-scale human and economic setbacks, plus irreversible ecological catastrophe. It's one of the strongest warnings yet given by the UN on the lasting impact of climate change on our future standard of living. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll be right back.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Freddie Mac will sell $6 billion worth of company shares to cover more bad debt losses. Last week, company officials set aside $2.5 billion for the 3 months from July to September. Exposure to bad mortgage debt centered on the subprime factor, which is producing record loan defaults. Five countries that make up the East African community have agreed to a plan that would open their markets to the European Union. Controversial trade obligations are due to expire next month, ruled illegal by the World Trade Organization. Financial aid to help third world nations adapt to more floods, droughts, and other changes due to global warming will cost the richest nations an estimated $86 billion a year by 2015. According to a panel of experts commissioned by the United Nations, half the cost, or around $44 billion, will go to improvements on infrastructure. Financial management software maker Intuit will acquire Homestead Technologies for $170 million. And stocks bounced back today on news that Citigroup got a cash infusion of $7 billion from the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 215 points to close at 12,958. NASDAQ up 40 points. The S&P 500 up 21. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn, America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Yeah! Six minutes after the hour, this is the nightly roundtable that we lovingly refer to as the Horn Section. It is ad-libbed, it is unscripted, it is as real as live radio can be. And in fact, we've got with us, as per usual, Peter Godbold, having just wrapped up another fabulous, fabulous installment of Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Peter, are you there?
Thank you, darling. Yes, I am here, and I had a marvelous time.
So glad, so glad. And are you running out? Do you have one of those tennis sweaters, Peter? I just got to know.
I so want to get a Tritlot sweater, and it was just the most precious little sweater I ever saw in my life, and it had the little collar, and oh, how nice it would be to tie the arms together.
Yeah, around the neck with the, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Also on the line with us for his first foray into the improv wonderland that is the Horn Section, our very own Mark Levine of the Radio Inside Scoop. Mark, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you. I feel like I've hit a time machine and gone back to the 20s and someone won't quit playing the piano, but that's okay. I'm ready and ready for it. Let's go.
No, is there music still playing?
No. I just, that old-timey, I just feel like, there's a guy in striped shirts with one of those hats on. That's
yeah, and the little, and the little garters on the sleeve, sure.
Right, exactly.
All right, then. Well, you haven't done this before, Mark, but it is just a load of fun. It's just an absolute blast. We may be joined here in a little bit later by our other partner in crime, John Fox, just to sort of round things out. Being as you're the new guy on the block, you got anything that's burning you up for this hour?
Oh, I don't know. There's some things I didn't quite get to finish in my own hour, but I'll go wherever the conversation leads. I was thinking about some of the things. I don't know if we're going to get all serious here in this hour, but I was thinking about illegal immigrants and the things that the Republicans do to make them the next tar baby of... they can't pick on African-Americans anymore, and increasingly, not yet, but increasingly they can't pick on gay people anymore, so illegal immigrants are the next ones to put all the nation's wrongs on. And
or as
that sounds so serious, and I don't know if that's appropriate for this hour.
No. We've done all kinds of serious and not so serious and lighthearted, and it's really about whatever's moving the individuals who are party to the discussion, so... if you want to take the lead, you do it. I've got one that's a little bit lighthearted here that might sort of, I don't know if Peter's gotten to it or if it's in his list. We can start it off. The gauntlet has been thrown down, guys. The American Family Association is challenging the gay community.
Oh?
Yes.
To do what?
Well...
We can do better, you know.
Hell yeah.
Well, see, the Human Rights Campaign came out and issued a challenge to pro-traditional marriage supporters by saying, put up or shut up, by calling for a boycott of Walmart because they won't provide domestic partner benefits. And they say that they're going to send all of their business to Target this year. Well, the AFA, the American Family Association, and Donald Wildman
has... Are they going to do boycott Target?
They're going to boycott Target, and they're encouraging people to send a message to Wally World, saying that I promise in the name of Jesus that I will shop at Walmart some this Christmas season. Oh, glory!
Well, Peter, you know what this means.
Well,
they're going to officially change the name to Target. Clearly.
Well, the thing
which
that comes
is what
to my mind,
every gay man I know calls it.
Yeah, the thing that comes to my mind, though, is that Walmart stocked Brokeback Mountain, and they even had Brokeback Mountain posters as you entered, you know, in the front of the building, like in the glass, you know, as you go through the double doors. So it seems to me that would have been sign enough to permanently, you know, write off Walmart as far as they're concerned. I'm surprised they're still stirring this pot.
Well, they're just so proud of Walmart because... Walmart's, you know, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the American experience, making sure that six sick homosexual partners can't get no health care.
Well, you know, the thing about Walmart though is they hire illegal immigrants, so they're going to have to get their evil groups down straight because you know, if they don't like illegal immigrants, they can't go to Walmart.
Well, the other thing about Walmart is their own employees, gay, straight, or, you know, asexual, can't afford the damn health care in the first place.
Well, of course not, because they're not allowed to be in unions or anything else. But that's another reason why they like it. Because let's face it, if you're Christian, then you really hate working people. At least according to the American Family Association.
Well, yeah, yeah. So this is, you know, there's a take action alert here. Let's see how they want us to take action real quick.
You know, they tried this with Disney. I remember.
Oh, they claimed victory with Disney.
Well, that's because Disney's out of business now. I'm not sure I understand the victory.
I think it's because Mickey finally actually married Minnie and quit running around with Goofy or something.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Our guest from my previous hour was just telling us that he went to a church that constantly put the boycott Disney posts in the bulletin every Sunday.
Still?
This was a few years back.
I don't know that any of these boycotts work. I mean, not since the Great Montgomery Bus Boycott, but that was different. That's a local group of you know, people fighting for the civil rights, focusing on a local bus company. I can't think of a single national boycott that worked. For any group, left or right. I remember when the gay community wanted to boycott Coors beer. Now, you could call that a partial victory because Adolf Coors, as right-wing as that old bastard is, his group did give some money to, I don't know, someone in the gay community, and they sort of declared a truce. But I don't think any of these boycotts really work. Do you? Either of you?
It's purely propaganda, guys.
I mean, even when they try to stop grapes, even on the left, you know, Cesar Chavez, right? Don't eat Chilean grapes. I mean, who noticed where their grapes were coming from?
That's a good point. But the AFA is used. Their current whipping boy is Ford Motor Company, because Ford because Ford persists in trying to sell cars to the homosexuals.
You know,
well, they named that one car the Probe.
Stop it. Just stop it.
We need chauffeurs to sell the cars.
Hey, Peter, if Howard Stern needs someone else to help him out, you know, you're around.
But, they send out an email alert every time Ford stock shares drop. Christians are sending a message to the Ford Motor Company.
Corporation. Look, who knows? I mean, Henry Ford, it's another old bastard, right? I mean, he was as anti-Semitic as they come. He's the guy who has the wonderful idea of bringing the Protocols, the Elders of Zion, to the United States.
Well, we
is responsible for a lot of American anti-Semitism. Now, I don't charge current Ford in any way with its founder, but it just shows you how far that company's gone.
No, but we pointed out last week, Mark, that it was Henry Ford in one of his articles. I think it was The International Jew, The Greatest American Problem. I think that was in the Dearborn Independent.
Yeah, that sounds like something he'd write.
that he invented the war on Christmas.
Really?
What?
Now, see, I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
There's only 28 days left this year, you know, the war.
Have you burned your Christmas tree yet, Peter?
Not yet, but I'm loaded for one.
I haven't crucified my wreath yet either, so, you know, I got work to do.
What do we have to do? Take the baby Jesus out and eat him? No, wait, that's okay. That's transubstantiation.
No. Come on. Get with your own mythology there, Mark. You have to make matzah out of him. I mean, yeah.
Well, right. Well, no, I know, but the Catholics make matzah out of him and eat him.
That's true.
So, you know, I figure cannibalizing your God would be a bad thing, but apparently it's all good for them. I'm not quite sure how that works.
He complained about the absence of the mentioning of the birth of Christ in Christmas cards in 1922.
Well, there you go.
So the next time you see John Gibson, there's a war on Christmas. Just remember,
he's going to be one this year because, you know, I have to get suited up. I mean, do we need body armor?
Oh, yeah, because the AFA was complaining recently that Christmas had been banned from PetSmart.
Ah, that's it. That was the opening salvo. I had forgot. I was trying to place that. Yes, it was PetSmart that they're very up in arms about. And so, you know, holy dog bones the whole bit. But PetSmart is the guilty one this year.
But it gets worse.
You know, dogs just don't respect Christmas.
No, they don't. They don't.
They don't. I mean, they would take a leak on that tree if you're not watching them.
I've seen it happen.
There you go. Really, PetSmart is the one causing the war on Christmas. It all makes sense now.
Well, you should also know that at Gap, Old Navy, and Banana Republic, Christmas hardly exists. For these three companies, all owned by Gap, the only items listed as having anything to do with Christmas were a pair of boxer shorts and a child's sleepwear set.
God, I hope the war is won this year. I so am so tired of hearing it every year.
Don't you know it's going to end Christmas? Christmas is in America. You watch. One day, them liberals are going to win the war, and the next day, the Grinch will have stolen Christmas, and there will be no more.
I know. You know, I want to make Donald Wildman sign the surrender documents on the deck of the flagship of Old Navy.
Good point.
God, what a crazy place we live in.
You know,
luckily, I don't think anyone really takes them seriously. I really don't.
Well,
I mean, they take themselves seriously, I guess.
Oh, they take themselves deadly in earnest.
Yeah, no, that's true. But they're the only ones.
I think it's getting that way, except for the little old ladies who sign over their Social Security checks. They're becoming more and more irrelevant, in my opinion. But, Mark, something struck me about...
I think they need a new war. I'm
all for a war on Easter. I think we're ready for a war
exactly.
on Easter.
Let's take on the Easter Bunny.
I know. You know, think what we could do. We could put little rainbow flags in the Easter bonnets. We could subvert it
Easter
in so
really
many ways.
It's a gay holiday, isn't it? I mean, when you think about
it. It's very gay. Honey, I remember all
funny.
My bonnets.
I mean, come on.
It is. And the whole... But, Mark, what you were saying at the very beginning of the show about the immigration thing, and, you know, you can't really beat up the gays that much anymore, so now they're going for the immigrants. And when you consider that, though, in terms of they seem to be finding out all of a sudden that that they are a huge voting bloc, the brown people who are coming over to pick the vegetables,
et
cetera.
Well, not the illegals, but the legals. And unfortunately for the Republicans, the legals have all this sympathy for their own relatives. Which really is a perverse kind of family values, because any Republican will tell you they should, you know, throw them under the bus. But apparently they do, and so in Virginia, for example, in the 2007 elections, the Republicans who, you know, had a terrible record, they were running the legislature for a long period of time, doing all kinds of awful things that I don't need to go into, but the Republicans tried to change the subject by blaming everything on illegal immigrants, and it totally flopped. And this is Virginia. I mean, this is the South. This is a place where people are supposed to, you know, hate them brown people. And it just didn't work. It's getting hard to demonize anybody anymore.
Well, that's a sign of progress, isn't it?
What's this country coming to? I mean, I at least always will have a demon. I could always blame all the world's trouble on smokers And that works for me. So.
And brother, we got you outnumbered right now. I got to tell you.
Are you smoked too, Peter?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Like a chimney.
Sensor sticks.
One in each hand.
Tobacco companies, which end up funding the Republican Party.
I know, that's the worst part of it. The worst part of it is that part, the funding the Republicans that goes
in their pocket. That's right. If cancer doesn't get you to stop, you know, helping Jesse...
I wrote to the Natural American Spirit Tobacco Company, and they assured me that they give no money to Republicans, so, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I smoke those 8-packs a day.
I don't believe him for a second. That's the drug the Republicans...
That's only because you're a zealot. You're a zealot.
I am a zealot. I am a proud, intolerant non-smoker.
Well, God help any of my guests if I quit smoking, because I'm going to be so freaking mean. I'm just going to chew them up, spit them out. Hi, welcome to the show. What the f*** do you want? Oh,
you got a cigarette?
That could be funny.
Oh, Lord, I can see it
coming. How did you get started smoking, Peter? Some 14-year-old
guy. I smoked for a long time back in the days when I was
smoking. Started at like age 15 or something.
Well, I guess I started in my 20s, you know, going to clubs, drinking, and then DJing and carrying on parties.
Started in your 20s?
And then I quit for about 10, 15 years, and that was great. But for some perverted reason, I picked it back up about...
it was some cute guy, wasn't it? Admit it.
It always is.
Cher Shayla, dude.
Something like that. I'm sure I don't recall the circumstances. There have been so many.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah, you're right, Mark.
We can send you a pack, Mark. It's easy to get started.
Okay. I have never
first one's free
in my life. I've never smoked anything. I've never smoked marijuana. I'm the most conservative, liberal, gay guy you've ever met.
not even meth and glue.
I can't put it to my lips, much less inhale. No.
Not a clove cigarette at the disco. I mean, Jesus,
never.
Mark.
Never. The most I've had is those little banana gum cigars. Those are good. I do chew on those. You know, when someone has a baby and they hand out those candy cigars, I like those.
We're gonna have to rethink some things here, Mark. You're not nearly decadent enough.
I'm really not. That's why Peter has the show, and I do this, you know, standard, boring political show, and I let Peter go and flit around and be fabulous. That's one adjective that's never been used to describe me. Far
maybe we
from
could
fabulous.
Start him on Virginia.
How I lost my West Hollywood visa, you know.
That's okay. They've threatened Peter's card a couple of times. He can't decorate.
No. Peter is safe. Peter's very safe. I didn't even see my first Betty Davis film until I was 25.
Oh, Mark, you
I know, I know. They threatened to bar my entry to West Hollywood. I had to go see it. I was required. One Betty Davis, one Barbara Streisand, and I think one Judy Garland or something were the requirements.
And an Oscar Wilde
novel.
Well,
you have seen Sunset Boulevard, have you not?
I have seen Sunset Boulevard, but only as an adult. I mean, only in my 30s did I see Sunset Boulevard.
Well we're going to have to...
And all of them. I never saw any of them as a kid.
Well, Mark, your show is a wonderful show, but nobody knows you're gay. When I hear your show, I want to call up so bad it goes, you're gay, you're gay!
I even have homophobes
you're gay.
On my show, Peter. I have homophobes on my show. And they don't know.
I know. It's quite remarkable.
Maybe if I just use the F word more often. Fabulous. The F word.
Yeah, that F word.
That would probably work.
Marvelous works, too. Marvelous is good.
Yeah, I just don't have that kind of lingo. I don't know. There are gay people I know, though, that, you know, when I knew them as straight, they sounded perfectly straight, but then they join the gay world, and suddenly they're trippingly fabulous and using those words, so forth, that I find, I don't know. They don't come trippingly off my tongue. Like I said, I was a failure. Oh, well.
Well, actually, this evening's show, I used the phrase, pull my dress up over my head and run from the room screaming. I actually said that on the air.
And Agnes, and I want you to know, Agnes had entered the studio, and as you were saying it, Peter, she was saying it word for word with you.
She's my evil twin, I'm telling you that.
Oh,
the woman really is. We're connected in some bizarre way.
And she, that's it. He knows. And she's pointing at me. See, he knows. He understands me. You don't understand me.
Oh, that's the advantage of being a gay man, Bob.
Oh, you know, I got to...
And women? What kind of advantage is that?
I don't know, but we just do. We just connect on some subliminal level.
Well, see,
I don't know how.
It's just because we're safe, and then they can, you know, fondle us without worry.
Yeah, they're in the ads. It's a safe thing.
I'm going to be leaving now, and, you know, you talk amongst yourselves, okay?
Well, Bob, we have to have you to pick on. If you weren't here, we would have
token,
no one to destroy.
Token straight guy. I mean, you know, Jesus.
Yeah, you're outnumbered, Bob.
God almighty. Oh.
But I think Peter and I are very different.
Well,
that's part of the diversity of our community.
Well, I forget. One of the moderators one time told me that you were gay, and I was, like, totally shocked. I said, Mark, are you serious?
Yeah,
this was, like, way back when. Yeah, I just had no idea.
I can't garden worth a damn. You know, I don't cook very well. My house is a mess. I need Queer Eye for the Queer Guy. I need those five guys to come to my house and you know, get me organized. I have great fashion sense from the early 90s. I'm a mess. What can I tell you?
Well, I completely. I'm very much the same way.
I can't do.
Excellent.
Yeah, the one thing that's no good on radio, you know. Oh, I can dance.
Well, we're gonna do video soon, right, Bob?
This is true.
Oh God, I so dread that, Mark. My house is a mess, and I so don't want to clean it up.
Oh my God! You just see my little studio here. I mean, this is a colossal mess. We'll have to have very tight angles.
Very. A close up on the board and a close up on the monitor, and I'll just look and see my hands.
Oh, again with the hands.
That's right, Mark. They're doing more research on our hands again. Remember that was the index finger.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, they're doing more research.
You know, mine is longer, fourth finger. But I thought it was about the brain connection being stronger or weaker, or what?
Wait. The ring finger is longer than the index finger.
Right,
yeah,
and gay men.
Your ring finger longer than your index finger, Bob?
What? I can't hear you. What, huh?
Is your ring finger longer than your index finger?
You're not coming through, Mark. I refuse to answer. I refuse to answer.
A little bit of fear there, Bob?
Well, but that's okay. You know, growing up in Alabama, they said, you know, if you've got that little white half moon thing up there by the end of your fingernail, up where it goes into your little white half moon, that means you've got black blood.
Wow. I didn't even know I had black blood. I'm learning so much.
Well, I only have it on my thumbs, so I must be a thumb black guy.
You got black
thumbs.
Don't
go there, Peter. Don't go there. Just quit now.
Stopping now.
Yeah. Rule of holes. Stop digging.
Oh, my. But I'm the same way. I so need help. Someone to... I don't have a fashion sense. I don't have a decorating sense. I don't cook. But other than that...
Yeah, and my index toe is longer than my big toe, so God only knows what that means.
Your index toe. Who has an index toe? Do you point with your toe?
Yes. I'm prehensile.
Okay, only in Alabama. Yeah, but see, that's...
I brachiate too, Mark.
That's why y'all count to 20 down there. I understand that.
Some of us can count to 21.
Those are the ones in West Virginia, right?
Water's cold. Deep, too. That's a punchline.
If you keep marrying your cousin, these things happen, Bob.
What am I going to do with you two?
So I don't know.
I don't know. I'm being much less serious than I am on my normal
show. But
hey,
serious.
It's 11 o'clock. I should be drinking by now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, dancing.
You should be dancing. See, I was going to the same place, Peter. You guys are worrying me. Are you rubbing off?
It happens.
Yes, it happens.
You hang around with us too long.
If I get up in the morning and I have fashion sense, there's going to be a problem.
That's why there were laws years ago about more than one of us. You can't have two congregating together because it turns into this very quickly.
Now I understand the whole objection to gay marriage thing.
Then we start recruiting. And, we get a toaster for every five, right? Right, Peter? Is that the new rule? I don't remember.
Yes,
and
it is.
Yeah,
and
a Tiffany lamp when you hit 50?
I probably. That sounds about right. I'll have to check my manual.
Yeah, I'm in line for the toaster oven this month. I think I may meet the quota.
Jesus.
Cool. Cool. I just reconnected, by the way, with my old gay bridge partner, who he wasn't all the time. I started playing bridge when I was 17. I'm really a gamesaholic. Here, secret insights into Mark Levine. I am a complete gamesaholic.
He is. He is. We took a train trip together. He brought board games.
I did.
Really?
I did. I'm a gamesaholic. My law school roommate has told me that if ever he's going against me in a trial, all he has to do is introduce me to a new game the night before. I will spend all night trying to master it and totally screw up the case the next morning. I am a gamesaholic. But I've always loved the game of bridge. I play tournament bridge. It is the best game on earth, and I know people think of it as an old women's game, but it's actually a great game. But I remember I was 17 and in a bridge world where everyone was over 50. And today they're probably all over 70. But this guy was 24, and that's very young. But still, I'm a 17-year-old, and we both kind of liked each other, and never knew till years later that we were both gay. And we just actually reconnected the other night. My good friend, and he's been with his partner for 20 years, who's a really good guy, and he makes his living playing bridge, so he's sort of my life I could have lived. You know, I look at those poker people or the bridge people, or even sports people. Can you imagine living your entire life just playing games?
Well, speaking of bridge, on a couple of fronts, Mark, apart from being a wonderful, awesome, stunning, awe-inspiring actor, wasn't Omar Sharif like the god of bridge?
Yes, he was. He was very good at bridge.
Had a newspaper column and stuff.
Deng Xiaoping, by the way, the premier of China, was also known for his bridge skill. All kinds of strange people.
Well, and there was a bridge scandal recently. Did you catch that?
Yes, there was. In fact, I got the inside scoop. You want the inside scoop for the bridge world? There's never a
particular
community than the bridge world, I assure you. They all know each other, and no one knows or cares about them. But in the bridge world, there was a huge scandal because there were the world championships in China. And America did very well. Apparently, we got second place in the Open, first in the women's, and first in the seniors. And the four American women, because when you go as a team of four, who won first place, went before the cameras to get their, whatever it is, gold medal or something in China, and they brought signs. And the signs said, "We didn't vote for Bush." It was a huge scandal in the bridge community. Should they have used this forum to make a political stand? And I think it's actually an open question. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're happy with these women's political position, but if they had said the opposite, you know, how would we have felt? You know, I don't know. Should the Olympics, should the Academy Awards, should you be able to do political things then? We know, of course, in Hitler's Olympics, we had black athletes who won those. Americans raised
Jesse
the
Owens.
Black power. That's right, the Black Power fist, which.
No, that was 1968. Really it was then. Just Jesse Owens didn't do the fist or anything. He just beat the hell out of all the Aryans.
No, but weren't there? No, that's back in 1936.
That's 1936. The Black Power salute's 1968 in Mexico City.
Excuse me. All right. Okay.
So, oh Lord, I'm a sports
Jesse
geek.
Jesse Owens made some kind of gesture at the Berlin Olympics, but you maybe
no. What it was is Hitler refused to shake his hand.
Oh, okay, all right.
After he had run circles around the master
right.
race.
But that's the question. You know, I don't know. I frankly, let me ask you both. It's an open question, and the kind of stuff we almost never or discuss on the horn. But should people be encouraged or discouraged from making political statements? And again, they may not always be our politics. At international sports events, whether they be bridge or the Olympics or, frankly, even the Academy Awards. I remember Vanessa Redgrave made a strong PLO-supporting statement back in the 70s, which was harshly criticized.
And Marlon Brando sending the Sioux woman to accept his Academy Award after
the... Or Jane Fonda going to Vietnam. Or frankly, we can morph this into Oprah Winfrey, who's stumping for Obama, if you
Why
want
is it...
That
okay,
far,
that's interesting. Personally, I don't have a problem with it either way, but it always...
Really? I mean, if someone got up there and said, stop killing babies, ban abortion, and they put the signs up there...
You know what? I would rather know that, Mark. I would rather know that, because then I wouldn't go to that dumb son of a bitch's movies anymore.
Huh.
I mean, that,
I don't do a lot of. I don't have an opinion on this.
I don't do a lot of TV anymore. But I won't allow if I walk in and the TV is on. Everybody Loves Raymond. I look at one of the kids and I say, change it.
Oh wait, who did what? I don't even know.
That stupid right wing twit Patricia Heaton that played the wife on Everybody Loves Raymond. She's a radical, hateful, vicious right winger, and I want nothing to do with her.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Ron Silver, the Hollywood actor. If I see his name on a cast list, automatically I will not watch that film.
And I don't know what he did either.
Another hateful, Bush-loving, Bush-licking right-winger.
I knew Drew Carey was. That one I knew. He seems to talk
Drew
about
Carey? Him. Tell me, no, he...
Well,
amazing.
Of course he is. He's the love child of Denny Hastert. He has to be. Have you seen the pictures?
Yeah, that one I knew. I knew Drew Carey was a huge right-winger. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, when Anita Bryant did her Orange Juice Queen and became, you know, Ms. Gay Hater Central... I see what you're saying. At least you know who they are. It just seems it's a weird mix. I mean, you want to enjoy the sports person for their sports, or enjoy the actor for their acting. But it's a problem, and it goes all the way back to Wagner, who I have to admit, as much as I don't like to, that has done some incredible music. He has an incredible talent. He also supported Hitler and the Holocaust. So,
and Kurt Schilling came out during the. Reverse the Curse, what was that, 2004 World Series?
And I liked him because I'm a Red Sox fan until I found out how much he supported Bush. And I'm like, damn, don't worry.
And then, you know, bang, it's to hell with him.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it contributes more to the divisiveness in this country, but I've gotten to a place, Mark, and I guess I'm just mean and hateful and spiteful and stuff, but I don't want anything to do with him. And frankly, what I find interesting is that mostly it's our side that makes the statements because we don't have anywhere else to make those statements.
True. That's true, and that's why when you think about political events, particularly the Olympics, you see defections. That is where people are being muzzled, and Jesse Owens is a very respectful example. But there are people who could take it too far. It was a huge conflict, the bridge world. I mean, they're thinking of banning these women from playing bridge, which I think is a huge overreaction. It's not against any rule. I mean, if they want to make a rule, fine. But, you know, to ex post facto, to say to these women, oh, you can't do this, it was wrong, and to actually penalize them when there was no rule against it to begin with, that's clearly wrong in my book. If they want to make a rule for the future, you know, fine. But I don't know. I mean... So, I don't know about a rule, but it may have been inappropriate. It's weird. Peter,
what was her position, Mark? What was her position?
I don't really have one. I'm kind of agnostic on this. I see the problem. I mean, I see the we don't want to make every sports event into a political thing. That's not the proper place and time. I get that. On the other hand, I'm not really out to muzzle anybody either. But what are your thoughts, Peter?
Well, by the way, let me chime in real quick. This is the biggest horn section crowd we have had thus far. John Fox is with us. Hey, John.
G'day, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, John.
Your Australian victory. I am so proud of your country right now.
Yeah, man. It's like I tell you that the initial buzz still hasn't quite worn off yet. I think it will once Rudd and his cabinet and everybody are all kind of inducted officially. I think it'll settle down. But it's I really hope one of these days you all over there get to experience what I watched down here, which was democracy actually working.
I tell you, I feel it all the way over here. I mean, on the other side of the globe, I really feel it. I'm just so proud, and I'm proud of the way in which he won. It wasn't just that he won because, you know, the conservatives had been around for, I guess, 11 years or something, and people were tired of him. I mean, he literally defended unions. He defended workers' rights and still won. And won a demonstrative victory, right? I mean, it was pretty big.
Well, yeah, it was the second largest swing ever, and the largest swing since World War II. And the thing that it came down to is the it's time factor did play somewhat. However, what made this interesting is that Howard had a pretty good track record in. You know, as far as he can have control over things, the economy was really solid for a long time. But It was this workers' rights thing that came in, and he only did it purely because by a fluke in the previous election, he got a majority in the Senate and was reelected to his fourth term with an increased majority, and without ever having mentioned anything about this work choices regime.
Explain that to the listeners, because I'm not even sure I understand it all. What really was the issue, and how can we use that to help us? Because, you know, unions in America are as weak as they've ever been. And so I'm really curious what lessons we can learn from Australia.
Well, what I thought was really good that Labor did this time is they didn't allow their own history to be rewritten by others. Because the last Labor government, there was high interest rates and some other things, but the part of the conversation that never came into play until this time was the fact that those Labor governments were the ones responsible for taking the restraints off of the Australian economy. And it was those reforms that made it possible for Howard and his ilk to have their really good run. However, Australia at that moment had to suffer a bit of the we've just let the genie out of the bottle. This is going to be good in the long run, but right now it's going to hurt. And so we did have these high interest rate, you know, times high inflation, but it was really because the Australian economy had been so overly controlled. When they freed it up, it kind of had to go a little bit nuts before it settled down to a system that pretty much
happened in our economy. Ronald Reagan back in 82, and I mean, they had to sort of go to high interest rates and so forth to get the inflation down. I mean, sometimes you need some pain to make the economy better. But I want to know this issue of workers' rights. I want to understand what was the issue there.
Okay. Now, basically what, you know, people hear, you know, history of the unions in Australia, and they hear about the war fees and things like that, where, you know, the thuggish side of the unions, you know, showed their muscle and, you know, made skinny little millionaires quake in their boots. However, we haven't had in this country even union, you know, direct bargaining since the previous Labor government got rid of it. And they introduced enterprise bargaining, which was extremely flexible. The unions were always in on the conversation for contracts, but it was basically as being part of the oversight. And things pretty well worked. Well, John Howard's second in command, Peter Costello, is the member of a group whose name escapes me at the moment. But their charter basically says that they live to remove all industrial relations protections from people, full stop. They want it to, like, not, you know, they shouldn't even exist.
Kind of things, or things like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. So then they passed this. They passed these work choices rules, and you know they basically were saying, well, now people have the choice whether to be part of an enterprise bargaining agreement, or you can negotiate one on one with your employer.
Sounds like the right to work laws in some states in the United States, actually.
And so what ended up happening to real people, and many of them the Howard battlers, who were probably the biggest turn against him, were people that, you know, rock up for work one day and they say, by the way, as of Friday, you're gone for operational reasons. They don't have to be any more specific than that. You've got zero protections. And then that job is advertised a week later for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year less. All kinds of things like overtime was done away with. And you weren't given a choice. Bosses were just coming down and going, here's the new agreement, sign it or no job. So while there was, you know, talk about how this is also good for job creation, the government was actually hiding their own internal numbers on actually what was happening to people. And that was another major factor that compounded the work choices thing, Iraq, and various other ugly things from the Howard government, was the fact that they had been deemed the most secretive government in Australian history. And all of the news media
outlets.
Yes, all the news media outlets in Australia got together and condemned the Howard government for their incredible ability to block freedom of information requests. And
John,
all this stuff.
Have you spent time in the United States?
Yes.
Have you spent a lot of time here?
He grew up here,
Mark. Okay, so you're an American. I mean, you've lived in Australia how long?
Getting on 10 years.
10 years. What would you say is, I mean, Australia seems to strike me, and I've never been there, and I'd like to go sometime, as one of the countries that's most similar to the United States. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and you tell me if I am. I mean, when I think of Canada, I definitely think of a more socialist, a more progressive country than the United States. But Australia does seem to have this rugged capitalism that is at least in theory, seems to be similar to American ideals. Is that fair, or do you think that Australia has got a more liberal?
I think it's fair. I think it's fair what you have been shown, that you have that impression. And over the last 10 years, the government that's been in has tried to put across that impression. But when you get right down to it, this country is really built on a worker, you know, it's really, you know, done up by the unions. There's a huge, proud labor, you know, history in this country, much more than the United States. And I think it's been, and that's part of the reason why the change to get rid of Howard was just so amazing to watch. People basically said, we don't like this toxic, ugly turn Australia has taken in the last decade. It's time to have the Australian concepts of a fair go return to the forefront instead of being ugly, nasty, xenophobic people, which is what they started to become over the last decade.
John, did that transformation start taking place with the rise of George Bush over here? I mean, it didn't seem like, Howard came in toward the end of the Clinton administration, and when he came in, he didn't seem like so much of a prick.
Good question.
Well, I think that...
Kind of like Tony Blair, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there is the George Bush effect in there. However, I think at that time, globally, things were lining up that we were going towards this ultra-conservative kind of normal. And the Australians, when they voted Howard in, it was basically kind of taking what we dealt with this time around, but flipping the polarity around. The Labor government had been in a little too long. They were a little too arrogant. And the Australian people said, hey, you know what? Yeah, you guys actually haven't done bad, but you're starting to, you know, outgrow your britches here a little bit. It's time to send you home. Yeah, and Howard then changed the dynamic of Australia to be much more consumerist than socially aware. And I watched kind of the soul of Australia get kind of sucked down into this deep, dark hole when I first moved here. And I wasn't quite sure whether it was my perception that had changed or whether Australia had actually dramatically changed. And I think it was Australia actually had dramatically changed. The ideas of greed and as long as I'm okay, everyone must be okay kind of vibe started to creep in. And that's not how Australians want themselves to be perceived. The whole Hanif affair with that doctor being strung up and used as a political football by a government that was struggling to hold on to power and would hold on to power at any cost and even use an innocent citizen as a political football between countries, sending him home, back home, you know, back to India and back and forth, when everything's lining up that the guy was stitched up from moment one and the whole thing was complete garbage. So it was just, you know, I think it had been building up for a long time.
That young people played a major role. The polls I saw, and I'm obviously just an observer on the other side of the globe, but showed that young people were overwhelmingly for change, that sort of people under 30, and then between people 30 and 50, Kevin Rudd still won, but not by as much, and that people over 50 actually voted more for Howard than for Rudd. I don't know if you read those things.
Well, yeah. That pretty well rounds it down. What was interesting, though, is in the elderly category, the real shift that happened there was a shift from Liberal, which is Howard's party, to the Greens. And I found that one fascinating. And, you know, maybe it's a situation of you have an entire generation of people looking at the world around them and thinking about their grandkids. But there was this massive shift to the Greens, and then Greens' preferences played a huge part in certain state contests for labor. They wouldn't have gotten over the line.
Party in Australia? I mean, your Liberal is the most conservative you have, I guess.
Yeah, the Liberal Party, and they ran the government in coalition with the National Party, which is kind of a bit of a country party. And they're the most
conservative then.
Yeah, yeah, and you know they have to form governments in coalitions. They can never win outright on their own, like Labor can win outright on their own. But there's also a massive faction thing going on here with Howard's party, the Liberal Party. There is a far right, you know, nutter Christian faction, especially in the state of New South Wales, that has been fighting for control of the party over the party nationally for some time. And I think it's part of what led to their demise in this election as well. They now hold no government, federal or state. Their highest sitting member is the mayor of one of the major cities. So they're kind of really out in the wilderness. And it's a reaction to people going, hey, you know, we bought your crap for a long time, but we're just not buying it anymore. And see you later, boys. Bye.
Is Australia having an immigration backlash and problem like we are?
No. No matter how much the right wing would like to say that there is, boats don't make it even to the Australian mainland, and detainees are processed off on an island somewhere that's not even Australian land. And a lot of that, I think, will be changed with Kevin Rudd coming in, because it's become a completely inhumane, very unfair system. I mean, women and children locked up for 6 years just finding out whether or not they get to apply for temporary citizenship. You know, it's all been just a mess. And the immigration department's been another political football that Howard has used, so that's going to end up being cleaned out. The first thing Rudd's going to do is sign Kyoto, which I think is going to put George Bush and the United States in a very interesting little corner.
We'll be the only ones left.
Yep. And we're withdrawing from Iraq, too.
You don't have illegal immigrant problems. You don't have people roused up. They don't get in, or people just don't care?
I think people want Australia to be more open than it is, and
of our problem. Here.
It's a very xenophobic right wing government that just got booted out, and they got all onto that. You know, we will decide how people come into this country. You know, and it all was very disingenuous, and the fearing the brown people thing was used as a political football just two elections ago, with Howard lying about Indonesian boat people throwing their children overboard to try and get sympathy to get rescued, which they knew was completely false. I think there's an older generation that still fears the commies coming down from the islands. I've actually heard these statements from some people. Oh, yeah, the commies. The commies.
Who are the commies?
Yeah, I just
are they from? China? I mean, I don't even know.
Well, it's them and the Islamists coming down from Indonesia that they're worried about, and that we need the U.S. to protect us from them, which is completely just a bit nutty to me. and then you have the rednecks, which just don't want anybody but white people anyway that they can inbreed with.
The crowd that was responsible for slaughtering the Aboriginals in the first place.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Now, Bob mentions here in chat, and I think that this is a really important point, is, you know, the voting is mandatory in Australia, Mark. You can't just not vote. If you don't vote, you get a fine. It's a couple $100, and, I mean, you won't be jailed for it or anything, but it's enough to get people out there on the day, and the elections are held on a Saturday. So everyone who's eligible to vote goes out and votes. And you actually see, it's really quite fun. You go to your polling place, and there'll be people from all the parties handing out their, you know, their how-to-vote instruction cards because of the preferences kind of thing that we have here. And, you know, be cooking up some, you know, some snags on the barbecue and that kind of thing. And, like, the community all kind of wakes up because this is the great day where we decide the direction of our country for the next 3 years. And everyone does it. And it's not actually a choice on voting or not. You have to be involved. And I think you end up getting more true results when everyone's involved. And I have become an absolute convert to the idea that in a democracy, voting should be mandatory.
Are there any proposals to change that, or are people pretty happy with that? No one moans and says, oh, I got to go vote, or I'm in trouble.
No, not at all.
It's Saturday. It's a carnival atmosphere. I mean, the way you describe it, John.
Well, and you know, people
it's
don't
enjoyable.
Look at it as, people look
we have mandatory
at it differently.
Jury service, but everyone complains about that in America.
Well, you know, if you ask the average Australian, would you want, you know, voluntary voting, you probably would get more often the answer being something along the lines of, no, I like it just fine. I don't want to have a system like America.
And you also, but now, so this is, it was, what, third week in November. Down there, John, that's pretty decent weather, right?
Yep, it's nice weather.
That's our May.
Right. So as a consequence, we've got two dynamics at work here. One, mandatory voting, which enhances civic participation, and two, voting A on a Saturday and B in decent weather. What better, Mark? Here's one for you. What better proposed election day for the United States of America than July the 4th?
Well, that may even be too hot. Actually, if you take 6 months...
Oh, it's too hot. Oh, it's too cold. Anything
hey,
to get
on.
Out of being in a democracy.
No, but no, okay, wait, what's...
I'm with Mark here, go.
Well, what's the day? November what? John?
It floats. This year it was later than... It was about as late as it could go.
So about the 20th or something?
Yeah, it was the 26th
okay.
This year. Very often it's...
On May 26th, on Memorial Day. Now, that's a good time. That's not too hot or too cold anywhere.
Yeah, how about the Monday of Memorial Day?
That works.
Because that's a Monday holiday anyway.
That's true. Well, the veterans are going to complain that we're taking their day.
By honoring the veterans who bled
do
and died so
Saturday.
We can...
Do it on a Saturday.
I know.
Do it on the Saturday.
And the
well,
saddest...
I think it should be done all weekend. I mean,
yeah, no. I like the Saturday idea too. I was just being a little bit snarky. But
you snarky, Bob?
Me? Oh, perish the thought.
Well, I think fines are a great idea. I really do, because in the United States, jury duty is considered to be a civic duty, and you can indeed get in trouble for not doing your jury duty.
Sure,
so why not voting? That is a hell of a civic duty.
And the saddest thing is that of all the brilliance that the framers of the Constitution showed. And their absolute commitment to not getting into overweening detail, the one place where they screwed that up was establishing a formalized, set in stone, you have to amend the Constitution to do it differently, date for the presidential election.
Right now. Hold on.
First Tuesday after the first Monday of November.
You're sure that's in the Constitution?
Yes, sir.
I'm looking right now.
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure, but I really don't think so. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes. Bob, that's a law. That's not in the Constitution.
Keep reading.
The only date in the whole Constitution, there's the first month, Monday in October is when the Supreme Court meets. It describes when Congress shall... assemble. I don't think November is in the Constitution, Bob. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think it's a law. It's a law.
Well, then it may very well be in one of the presidential amendments.
Let's see. Amendment 12. I'll keep peeking at it. Y'all talk.
Okie doke. Well, no. Actually, what we got to do is stop because John gets to do a show, too.
Well, listen, I have two very, very quick questions that are off topic, but I just died to ask them. One, Mark Levine, board games. Did you like Clue?
I love Clue.
I love
but
Clue,
I love all
too,
games. I don't like to choose among my children. I love games of any kind.
I love.
Oh,
Clue.
I
and
smell.
John,
I smell an online Clue tournament coming.
And John, what?
Bring
what
it
the
on.
Hell? John, what is a sugar glider?
I might have to disappoint you. I have no idea.
Well, it's some sort of small flying mammal native to Australia. I figured you had one. It's one of the animals that's covered by the college that will not cover domestic benefits, but they cover the pets for insurance. Anyway, sugar gliders. And so I was dying all evening to find out what a damn sugar glider was. If you
I'll
find
see if
out,
I can
let me
find
know.
Out. Okay, I'll see what I can do.
It sounds
cool.
Like fun. Get out your sugar.
Let's yes, it glide. Really does. Sugar gliders and Clue. That just sounds like a marvelous party.
Sounds like somebody Trent Lott runs around with, as far as I'm concerned.
Ooh, we'll have to save that for another day, Bob.
Ba-dum-bum. All right. Hey, boy, this is getting more fun by the minute. No, I mean, with things that...
We only got 10 seconds left, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But thank you, Mark. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, John, as ever. Upcoming, All Foxed Up with John Fox. And, hey, look, it's another edition of the Horn Section in the can. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
This is the Quality News Network. There's been an historic breakthrough in diplomatic efforts between Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the help of the White House. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to revive long-stalled peace talks starting early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference,